Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Bertrand Domek. How are you, Bertrand?
I'm very well.
Excellent. And we're also here with Graham Hines. How are you, Graham?
I'm very well, too. Looking forward to hearing some more about what Bertrand's got to say about sherry.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Graham's here because he knows a lot about the UK wine market or the UK market in relation to sherry. But Bertrand is the main man we're going to be talking to today. We finished last week and we were talking a wee bit about, you know, sort of the balance of supply and demand is now pretty much in balance in Jerez. But you're saying that, you know, 20 years ago, there was an overproduction. And from my recollection is that it wasn't so much that the supply went up, it was the demand sort of nosedived after a while. Everybody's grandmother sort of passed away eventually. It's a bad look at that one.
I think there's a bit of both. I think there was a big problem initially in which a series of people decided that the vineyards should be increased, and they were increased 3 times the surface that we had.
Yep.
And that immediately provoked the reaction of excess production.
Mm.
When you have excess production, you have immediately the problem of price going down.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And that price going down means quality is also going down.
Yep.
And that also produces a reduction in consumption. So there's a lot of things connected one with the other. As I say, I think now we are in for the last 4 years, we are in a much better situation because we have the adequate balance of offer and demand.
Mm-hmm.
The qualities of the wines have increased considerably. The prices should be revaluated. I think sherry is a wine of a considerable quality and should have the adequate value, and it doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse than being called, what a good value for money this sherry wine is. Well, I think it's the most insulting phrase you can say.
I was going to say, because I find sherry incredibly good value. It's a great wine at a bargain price.
Absolutely. I mean, that can't be. I mean, if you're giving a good quality wine, you should give perfectly quality price.
Yep.
And that makes bodegas, companies, be able to earn money, which is what they need to be able to provoke, you know, promotions and publicity for their product and to make it be known as it should be.
So you're saying that you're in balance, supplies dropped away. What's happened to demand over the last 10 years or so? Is it picking up? Is it dropping off? What's going on?
Well, going back to the word stability, I think it's a nice word. I mean, we are more or less stable in the last years. 20 years ago, naturally, we've lost a certain proportion. But now we are more or less balanced. We are producing about 40 million litres a year for all the markets. And that is a number that we would like to maintain or increase. But anyhow, let's wait for that.
And sherry's got a lot of different products. You know, there's a lot of different styles of sherry. There's dry sherries, sweet sherries, oxidative sherries, biological aged sherries. There's all sorts of different styles of sherries. What are the most popular and just in the world? And Graham can jump in if he wants with the most popular in the UK. And is there any change in style that people are preferring or moving towards or moving away from?
Yes. Can I just introduce the different types of sherries?
Yes. Sure.
Basically, from the Palomino grape, we obtain 5 different qualities of sherries from one variety of grape, which is quite fascinating because we have finos and manzanillas, which come from Palomino also, but they're fortified to 15% alcohol and are aged biologically with the flow yeast. Then we have the amontillados, also in the same line, which are totally dry, that come from the finos or manzanillas that have aged additionally without the flow yeast for additional time.
You normally fortify them up a little bit just to kill off the flow, don't you?
Possibly you could or you wouldn't. I mean, basically you're when you get the wines after fermentation, you divide into the ones that you want biologically aged, so you fortify to 15%, from those in which, because of their structure or body, you fortify to 17, so as not to have the floor yeast. So 2 degrees, 15 and 17. Mm-hmm. So from the 15s, you have finos and manzanillas, and later on, the amontillados, if you let them grow, because the floor yeast might die because of the lack of nutrients, or you might fortify additionally above 16%, and that will kill it. And on the other hand side, you have the olorosos, which are, you have never had biological aging, and you fortify to 17. And they age, and these American oak, 500-liter capacity butts, for without the floor yeast, consequently, they will be evolving in color due to that, naturally, the action of the oak or the action of the oxygen there that evolve, makes the wine evolve, and all the oxidizable elements in the wine will produce color. And there is another fifth type, which is called a palo cortado. Mm-hmm. That palo cortado is a very kind of mysterious type of sherry that is classified initially as one that will be going for biological aging. But in the process of aging, as you know, sherry has two phases of aging, one initial one as a vintage, and then afterward it goes on through the what we call the Solera system, which is a very typical aging process that we have in Jerez. Well, before it goes into the Solera, that wine is reclassified, and suddenly you appear these special wines, which are very, very special in characteristics because they've lost the floor yeast, but they've increased a certain amount in color, but they've got a very special, nice and clean aroma, and those will be classified as palo cortados. And those wines will then be refortified to 17% alcohol, and they will follow what the same line as the olorosos, but they're separate. They're very delicate type of olorosos. So from one variety of grape, Palomino, we have five different types, and the difference between them is just 2 degrees out.
I've only counted four. You've got Finos.
Fino Manzanilla.
Oh, Fino Manzanilla, yeah.
Amontillado.
Yeah.
Palo Cortado and Olorosa.
To be honest, I always, Manzanilla and Fino, I sort of put them together as the same because they taste very similar to me.
I know, but they are a domination of origin of their own.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me tell you an additional type, because we've spoken about the five dry. But as you know, we have another variety of grape, which are sweet, which are vinified so that the fermentation of sugar doesn't take place, so they're fortified. And that is a variety of grape called Pedro Jimenez, which
or
is picked,
PX,
which is then left to the sun to become a semi-raisin. And you press that and you obtain a very...
Is it dried on the vine or is it dried on...
It's dried on mats.
It's dried on mats, yeah.
And that will be fortified so it's not ferment. It'll have an incredible amount of sugar, very dark, and that is aged. And that is the wine that you use for sweetening the dry ones.
Yep.
And from that mixture of the sweet natural wine, which is a Pedro Jimenez, with the dry wines that we mentioned before, you mix and you obtain what we call liqueur wines, sweet liqueur wines, which would be the mediums and the creams, which are blends of the dry ones with the Pedro Jimenez.
Yeah. I always think of cream as, cream tells you it's a sugar. So if you get a pale cream, that's a pale as a fino, with cream tells you it's a sweetened fino, and then you've got...
They're all sweetened.
Yeah.
Because they come from, the pale cream comes from a fino, which you've added naturally rectified concentrated must because it has no color. And a cream will be a mixture, a blend of oloroso and amontillado, possibly, with PX to obtain the cream.
Do you use anything else other than PX for the sweetening component? Because the other grape variety grain that we didn't talk about is Muscatel.
Muscatel, yeah.
Is that used as rectified concentrate?
Normally, Muscatel grape, which are produced in the coastal area, are grapes which are vinified as a sweet wine. But naturally, they're not normally not put to the sun. So they are, you know, they've got about 200 grams per litre of sugar.
That's still quite high.
Which is quite high. Yeah. It's between 170 and 200.
And a PX gets up to like 400 grams. Yeah, it's crazy high.
Very sweet.
I describe it as crazy sweet. Some people use the word luscious, but I think crazy sweet's better.
Delicious, yeah. So we've defined the different types of sherries, the dry ones, the very sweet ones and the ones that which are blends of the dry ones with the sweet ones, which are the mediums and the creams. Now then, all these wines, it's funny, no, because Graham will speak about what, but each country will have very different ways of drinking. I mean, for example, in Spain, 80% of the sherry consumed are manzanillas and finas. Mm-hmm. So they are very pale and dry ones.
Yeah.
On the other hand, this country, the UK, 65% is basically cream and pale creams.
Yeah.
And then you go to Holland, which is a very important market for us. And there the majority is mediums. And Germany, very similarly. And then you go to the US, and basically that's dominated by the creams. So you have such a variety of wines and different tastes in different countries that it makes it rather complicated.
Yeah. I always think, I've got a friend who used to drink a lot of sherry, and it was a cream sherry type style, and he used to drink it in New Zealand because it was the highest alcohol per dollar spent, which I thought was quite shocking. And I got a very bad attitude about sweet sherries from that. So even now I'm tainted with that. And I love Finos. I quite like some of these walnutty flavoured dry Olorosos and things like that. But I just have quite a negative approach to some of the view on some of the sweetish styles of sherry.
I'm sorry to ask you, why do you have that effect? Because they're perfectly good wines. The blend is of a very good Pedro Jimenez and a very good Oloroso, basically, which have been aged and they're put together. The problem is the image of what people consider that people who drink cream sherries is the old lady that has a half-empty bottle from last Christmas that she out of the cupboard and she drinks a little schooner size, a little glass. That's the negative effect. But what we are trying to look at is that sherry, we'll speak about how do we consume it, but sherry is a wine, so consequently it should be drunk like a wine in a proper glass, a proper glass. And at the adequate temperature, so keep it in the fridge, and with the adequate food.
And kept fresh as well. Graham, Bertrand said that sweeter styles of sherry are popular in the UK. Do you know roughly sort of the breakdowns between say, the different types in terms of percentages or anything like that?
Yes, it obviously varies a bit, but I think Bertrand said it was 65. It's probably going down to 60% cream and pale cream, so the predominant is that. Roughly 25% of darker wines, which could include a Montillado or medium or Oloroso or Palo Cortado, and then about 15% it would be Fino and Manzanilla. And that's increased from about 10 or 11% 3 or 4 years ago. So the swing is cream and pale cream are reducing, and the others are all increasing slightly.
What do you think is changing that pattern?
Well, I think certainly the older generation of cream and pearl cream lovers are dying off. Some of them are being replaced. And as Bertrand says, there's nothing wrong at all with a glass of cream sherry. Try it with a bit of ice and a slice of orange in it. 2 in the morning, preferably, when you don't know what else to drink. It's a good thing to have. There are newer, younger drinkers who are coming in. They're seeing sherry as something they don't know about. They never really heard about. I mean, the older amongst us worry about vicars and tea parties and all those images of sherry. Well, that's a long way gone. Most of the current people who are starting to think about what they're drinking in their 20s, coming up to 30, have no baggage. So they're seeing sherry as something they don't know much about. They're tasting it. They're excited by it. There's lots and lots and lots of variations on the theme, and they're all getting excited about that. And especially in catering now, a lot of sommeliers are not necessarily from anything to do with even Europe, let alone the UK, and they're seeing sherry as something completely different. So you might find a Chinese or Japanese sommelier who is very excited. He or she sees it relating to their own cuisine, but also to the things we've got here. So it's a very vigorous, changing world at the minute, which is really exciting to be involved with.
One of the things that's quite trendy at the moment is cocktails. Does anybody use sherry as a base for cocktails?
Yes. Well, not as a base necessarily, but as an ingredient. I mean, there's one that's very popular at the moment called Bamboo, which has got sherry as a prime ingredient in it.
How do you make a bamboo?
I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. It's dry sherry. It's a vermouth like Neuilly Prior, and I can't remember what the mystery ingredient is. It's something like Cointreau, I think. I must go and mug that up. But certainly, probably led by the States, which is the home of the cocktail anyway, sherry in cocktails is becoming more popular. And over here, we're seeing it as well. There's a lot of interest, and we're getting inquiries all the time for, you know, how to use sherry in cocktails. Hence, there's a lot of head scratching and recipe reading going on.
Okay, now that sounds cool. All right, then. I think we're going to wrap it up, and next week we'll have a look at some of the regions and the soils and all that sort of thing associated with Jerez as a region. Cheers very much.
Thank you very much.